Welcome to Notes from the Western Edge, a monthly half-hour on-demand webcast featuring musicians who create on the edges of jazz, new music, electronics, and a broad expanse of sonic spaces in between. This month we hear from two musical mavericks, one in Chicago and one in Los Angeles. By the time Kalan Phil Curran moved to Chicago in 1953, he had already been on the road with Jay McShann and recorded with some of the biggest names in the blues. What came next was 3 years on the interstellar spaceways with Sun Ra, followed by more than 40 years of forging his own path through a self-created musical cosmology. When one thinks of Los Angeles in musical terms, free improvisation is not usually the first style that comes to mind. But that never stopped Tom Rashawn. Since the mid-1970s, he's been creating music that lives on multiple planes of freedom, which are always free of preconception and boundary. He says that John Cage opened up his mind like a can opener. Give him a listen and find out what's inside. I hope you enjoy the show.
Born in Mississippi, and my name was Corin, and no one could remember my name. I was the leader of the band. So I changed the emphasis to Coran, and then everybody remembered my name. Kalan means the book, and actually, I was given that name by the Imam of the great mosque of Xi'an, China. And I had an interview with him, and we talked for about an hour, and he asked permission to give me a Chinese name. As an astronomer, I've studied the book in the sky for, 40-something years. So the name was really appropriate. When I got back here, I shaved my hair off and called myself Kalan.
Everything about my interview with Kalan Phil Curran spoke both of history and of the future. With a bird or two chirping in the background, we sat in a room on the upper level of the Mackey Apartments in Los Angeles, designed by the early modernist architect Rudolf Schindler. The next night, Curran performed in West Hollywood at the historic Schindler House in a concert sponsored by SASIS, the Society for the Activation of Social Science Through Art and Sound. Born in Oxford, Mississippi in 1927, Curran has spent a lifetime exploring, studying, and creating connections between the past, present, and future, and between music and science.
Astronomy and music are one and the same thing. Really, the ancient music was based on the cosmos. And everything, all cosmologies come from, or rather the music and the stars are one. The culture, all of that makes up the cosmology. So in ancient Africa, they tuned very specifically. All of their group sounds were tuned to specific sound relationships that produce harmony with the cosmos. And that's what I've tried to recapture in the last 44 years I've been studying.
For Curran, it all started with singing.
In Mississippi, they had a rule when I was a little boy that you had to sing the first 30 minutes of school. So every morning we marched into the schoolyard and lined up, and we'd go into the chapel and sing these old songs for the first 30 minutes. You know, every time I feel the spirit, you know, and stuff like that. My Lord, what a morning. All of the old spirituals. And so that music has been lost. Now no one knows it except the older people like me. None of the young people hardly ever heard it, and it's distorted if they do hear it. Yeah. But if you stop and think about it, that was a very powerful music, some of the most powerful music in the human experience. And it's ours, and we cast it aside.
The roots of this singing go back a long way.
I'll remind you of the South African people. Did you see the video or the movie Amandla? It's called A Revolution in Four-Part Harmony. Well, anyway, it describes how the people of South Africa actually sang their way to freedom. That it was a song from the very first people came into South Africa. They had a song for that, and every development took place, they had a song for it, and eventually they sung the freedom song because they never gave up the song. And so that's, to me, is very symbolic. I think that all people need the song because we all come from the same place and we all came from there singing. So we all need the song. I believe there is an eternal song that we all know. And I've heard it in churches around places I've been around America. And I know that it's old because I've been studying the modes and the sound centers that people use, that I know that this song is at least several hundred thousand years old, if not millions of years old.
We're listening to Ascent, one of two solo excursions from Coran's CD Meditations. The journey to his recent solo music passed through many, many bands over the years, including Sun Ra's orchestra. After growing up in Missouri and attending college at Lincoln University, Coran hit the road with one of the icons of Kansas City blues and jazz, Jay McShann. When McShann first offered him the gig, he wasn't too keen on the idea.
So I had heard about him, you know, but I wasn't too anxious to play with a blues band because I didn't want to play the blues all night. I wanted to play music, you know. And man, I got there the first night I played with McShann. He went off into an odd meter in the middle of a blues solo. And I had been taught that these people didn't have that much on the law, you know. That's what the thing was at school, you know, they don't know what they're doing and something. So I was shocked. He had to bring us back in because all of us were lost. We didn't know where he was, you know. And so I developed another respect right away.
Playing with McShann introduced Coran to a world of the blues that was totally new to him. While working a nightly gig in Port Arthur, Texas, the band would come into Houston during the day to record with some of the biggest names in blues and rhythm and blues, including T-Bone Walker, Gate Mouth Brown, and Percy Mayfield. This grounding in the blues can clearly be heard in Coran's solo on Sun Ra's Space Loneliness. Playing with McShann in 1950 introduced Coran to a new musical world. Playing with Sun Ra took him somewhere completely different. He had moved to Chicago after playing with McShann and a tour of duty in the Army. In 1958, Sun Ra saxophonist John Gilmore changed his world.
I met Gilmore. I was playing some gigs with Gilmore, and he says, "Man, I wanted to turn you on or something." So he took me over to rehearsal, and the music was so complicated. I mean, he had all kinds of impossible stuff to play. And so it was a great challenge, and it kind of hooked me in. You know, I wound up practicing 6 hours a day for almost 3 years and playing 6 hours a night.
That's 12 hours a day, playing music day in and day out. While Coran was in this Sun Ra boot camp, musical ideas that used to seem cast in stone began to morph into something else.
Sonny, he used dissonance. And I guess my early training had turned me against dissonance as a forming of expression except for anything but displeasure.
Sun Ra forced Karan to re-examine the boundaries of his music.
I had borders in my mind. Everybody's fixed. You know, you can do this and you can do that, but you can't do this. There are no borders in Sun Ra. He broke all the borders everywhere. You know, if you're playing a song and you're going to play the changes, you know, he said, play. You know, whatever. Go ahead and play. Just go ahead and play until it hooks up, see? And that was difficult to me. Just blindly play until you hooked into something. You know, it's just, what he meant really was that trust your instincts, your ability to hear and feel. And that's what I was afraid to do.
But not for long. Here's Karan playing the very untrumpet-like violin uke zither on 1960s Angels and Demons at Play. After 3 years with Sun Ra, Karan had other ideas he wanted to pursue.
I could hear something else while I was playing with him, and each time I would go in it, he would interrupt me on the piano. So I said, I'll have to leave. And in 61, they got the call to go to Montreal. And they said, come on, we're ready. You know, we knew about 150 songs by heart, Marshall and Gilmore and myself. So we were red hot, you know, but I said, I can't go. I got to stay here. I'm going to study. And I remember real clear, Gilmore, I said, I'm going to work on my own thing. He said, man, you ain't got no thing.
With all due respect to the late John Gilmore, he was wrong about that. Not only did Karan have his own thing, in 1965 he was instrumental in establishing an organization that was to change the course of improvised music around the world.
Mewhall, Richard Abrams, and Steve McCall, I saw them walking down by Oakwood Cemetery one day, and we stopped and said, man, this is terrible. You know, we don't have any jobs, there's nothing going on, you know, and our music is at a standstill. So we decided to do something about it. And I had a big place, so I said, let's get everybody in 2 weeks, if you can, to come to my place on a Saturday, and we'll start something, do something we can do. And when we got there, about 40 guys showed up and argued for 3 or 4 hours on what is creative music. Because we decided if we're going to play together and present our own stuff, we're not going to present something that people want to hear, we're going to present what we want to play. And so that's the thing about the creative music. So we said the Association for the Advancement of Creative Musicians.
For the first AACM concert, Karan formed the Artistic Heritage Ensemble, which became well known for its gigs on the shore of Lake Michigan, just off Lakeshore Drive. Musicians who were to form Earth, Wind, and Fire often stopped by to check out the music. At the last gig on the beach, the audience numbered 3,000 people. We're listening to On the Beach from a 1968 recording. After years of working with groups, today Karan prefers to play solo. For almost 10 years, he's had a steady weekend gig at the Ethiopian Diamond Restaurant in Chicago, where he entices listeners with multi-tracked images of the sky with deep roots in the mist of history.
You find these spiritual connects to the sky, and the people lived out of the sky. When the slaves came here, that's all they sang about. It was all, every song, you can find some cosmic reference, just about every song, because they were in the sky. They lived in it. They knew the sky 10 times better than the slave masters. They knew where, I mean, they could find their direction. I've heard people say that Sojourner Truth and Harriet Tubman used the North Star. That was true, they used the North Star, but that was not all they knew. They knew the whole sky.
As does Kalan Phil Karan, musician, astronomer, historian, philosopher. In Los Angeles, for Notes from the Western Edge, I'm Richard Paskey. Under Tom Rashawn's name on his MySpace page are the words experimental, psychedelic, other. To those I'd add, absolutely. Rashawn grew up a few miles northeast of downtown Los Angeles in Alhambra, California. His childhood was filled with all things creative.
I was just kind of a creative monster and, you know, drew a lot and made... I was always banging on the back of the car. You know, my mom would put me in the back seat and I'd be hitting things and she'd go nuts. And eventually she ended up buying me a drum kit.
But even before the drums came the accordion, which Rashawn began playing at 8, reading notes and taking lessons. Then came the record store.
I had a voracious appetite for music and collected records like crazy. I mean, right after school and my grammar school days, I'd go right to the local record store and hang out, and I got to know the people there, and they'd let me hang out behind the counter and take any record I wanted and go listen to it in the listening rooms, and I just was eating it up live.
Two drummers in particular caught Rashawn's ear, Mitch Mitchell and Robert Wyatt.
They were great improvisers who found ways in between the beats and in between the rhythms, and Robert Wyatt's form of improvisation is he's always looking at a new way to revisit the rhythm and rethink it and reshape it. And that I keyed into the first time I saw him, which was or the only time I've seen him, actually, which was in 1967 with the Soft Machine opening up for Jimi Hendrix Experience at the Anaheim Convention Center. And that was a total mind blower.
So how did Rashawn get from drums and accordion to the electronic sounds you're hearing now from a recent remix of Something Old and Something New found on his MySpace page?
After being a frustrated drummer for many years and getting tired of being the only guy that was chugging up and down the stairs 4 or 5 times, I said, I gotta find another way. And I'd been doing experimental music prior to playing drums in a band, but so I started developing solo tape loop concerts.
But what started out small soon became large.
At first I was doing them with just one tape loop and processing each channel separately and building as much out of what limitations I had set up for myself. And little by little I started adding more and more instrumentation to it, started adding records that were kind of used as random ornamental stings. And then I started using keyboards and cassettes, and I ended up having just as much equipment as I did originally.
Much of Rashawn's music reflects his interest in the outer limits of art and culture, and it shows in titles like It Just Stood There, Pulsating, Glowing in the Dark, Hovering Slightly Above the Ground Trying to Speak. There's also his sly wit. We're listening to the title track from his 2004 CD, I Love My Organ. In a moment, we'll crossfade to And It Walks Through Walls. You'll hear it when it happens. Thank you.
I start with a blank slate every time. I try not to impose my will on it. I'm interested in just entering into a process and seeing what happens. And something always does. You know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But there is a lot of work in finding your way into it. All the tape loops that I've used in the past are all done randomly. I didn't want to make a conscious decision about a beginning and ending for a tape loop. So I bought endless boxes of those pre-recorded reel-to-reel tapes that they used to sell for home entertainment. And I would just make endless tape loops, random cuts, and make piles of them and then go through them. And they were chosen for their rhythmic and melodic content as well as their stereo separations, because I was interested in using older material, you know, what has now become lounge and exotica stuff. But I was also using things like The Carpenters and Cream and things like that. I mean, I was open to using anything I could get my hands on. And the reason I didn't want to be conscious of the editing was I kind of wanted to enter a kind of surrealist approach to automatic composition. So the loops were made randomly, a lot went into the trash, and then I was lucky to get the ones that I did get.
In the mid-70s, Rashaan had other irons in the fire as well.
And I met this guy, Harold Schroeder. So Harold and I decided to form this group called The Two Who Do Duets. And then little by little, we added some people in the group, and we needed a name change, so we just shortened it to The Do Duets.
Two duets are part of a larger collective of free musical spirits called the Los Angeles Free Music Society. You can hear their work in a massive 10-CD box set titled The Lowest Form of Music, or on Unboxed, a single CD compilation with cover design by Rashaan, whose previous designs for Prince, Lou Reed, John Cale, and R.E.M. have received 4 Grammy nominations. Here's what Sonic Youth's Thurston Moore had to say about the box set. The unearthing of the LAFMS recordings is experimental rock history at its most historical and hysterical, a completely bizarro and further out counterpart to the LA punk scene. Right now we're listening to the Do Duets perform The Great Difficulty of Understanding Things So Far Away, one of a set of group improvisations intended to accompany a film on the Viking space probe in the mid-1970s. Over the past 30 years, Rashaan has performed with many other groups as well. Here he is on the CD Extended Organ XOXO with Paul McCarthy, Frederick Nilsson, and Joe Potts, recorded in the late 1990s. This is This. Thank you.
I refrained from getting a laptop for a very long time because I liked the lo-fi approach, and I also liked the mistakes that happened, you know. And I was afraid I would lose that accidental, you know, quality to the work. What I found out was that there's new accidents that happen that are just as nice.
Rashawn's most recent release is Sweetly Doing Nothing on the School Map Records label. For this recording, he used a laptop computer running Ableton Live software, which still allowed him to use loops, but this time, the loops weren't pieces of recording tape cut up and spliced together, but instead were digital. Much of the music on this CD was featured in 2005's Visual Music Exhibit at the Los Angeles Museum of Contemporary Art. In this piece, Jazz 10,000 AD, Rashawn imagines jazz from the future and hopes that it sounds like it's melting. Rashawn has many projects cooking for this year and next, including a commission piece for the Kronos Quartet. Right now, I can't tell you what that piece will sound like, but of one thing, I'm sure.
I never like to repeat myself, and I really don't like to repeat others. So I was always trying to find my own way.
In Los Angeles, for Notes from the Western Edge, I'm Richard Paskey. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. Next month, just like last month, more surprises. In Los Angeles, for Notes from the Western Edge and Fresh Ears Media, I'm Richard Paskey. Until next time, keep listening.